This is Stacking the Box with NFL insider Matt Bertaram and Mark Carman. Welcome in Stacking the Box as we lead off on this after Thanksgiving holiday with complete nauseation. I've been eating all week long. Bertaram, I feel vile. For some reason, I can't get full. And I just keep eating. But week 12 is, for the most part, in the books. We've got a Monday nighter with the Seahawks and the Eagles and a Tuesday nighter, COVID Super Bowl, the Ravens and the Steelers. But we start with your Kansas City Chiefs, Matt Bertaram. I'm assuming you already did your Chiefs podcast today, so you may be Chiefs'd out. But, hey, this is the game of the day. Chiefs started out, led after one quarter, 17-0, and ended up holding on 27-24. Unbelievable day again for Patrick Mahomes, 37 of 49, 462 yards at three touchdowns. The Chiefs are 10-1. Now, Brady played okay, better, but a couple of interceptions obviously killed him. Thoughts on the Chiefs and the Bucks, Matt Bertaram? Good to see you.
You as well, Carm. I think the problem of not getting full you're referring to is a tapeworm. I hear you. I'm about one bite of food away from just being on the wall. But that being said, look, I thought the Chiefs game, it wasn't too far off of what I expected. I thought the Chiefs would throw the ball a lot because Tampa has a great run defense. And the Chiefs actually ran okay in the game. They ran for 4.5 yards a carry, especially second half. They did a nice job when they weren't taking 18 holding penalties. But I thought you'd see the Chiefs spread them out and put the ball up a lot. Mahomes threw 49 times, 462 yards. Look, the story of the game was the Buccaneers tried to single Tyreek Hill up, and it was a disaster. I mean, really, that's what it comes down to. 269 to 15th most in a single game ever, three touchdowns. Hill went into the day 14th in the league in receiving yardage, and now he's number one. So a big day.
Yeah, 20.7 yards per catch. And the one throw in the right corner of the end zone where, it's got an inch of a window to get in there and they connect. I mean, it's just preposterous play. How do you defend that? I forget who the Bucs' cornerback was.
Carlton Davis, who I think is contemplating retirement after that game. No, you're right, man. I mean, my dad and I are talking about that, actually. Like, there is no defense for that throw. There isn't. I mean, that's a throw where if you're a defender, you just tip your cap and say, hey, man, like, you made that throw, all the power to you.
And the catch, too, like, it's so much concentration involved in all of that. How is he getting it through that window? Is it actually going to work? I mean, it's unbelievable.
No, listen, I agree.
I give the throw more credit than the catch, but the whole thing's insane.
Yeah. No, listen, Mahomes, I mean, all three of the touchdown plays to Hill were ridiculous. I mean, the first one's a 75-yard bomb that was actually a little underthrown. It was a good throw, but it was a touch behind him. Hill made the adjustment, made a couple guys miss and walks in. All told, though, man, I mean, yeah, you look at the stats, 543 yards of offense, 26 first downs, yards per play, 7.5 yards per play. You look at them and you pretty much say, yeah. I mean, the Chiefs took 10 penalties in the game. They went 0-3 in the red zone. And they still won the game and had 543 yards. So that tells you all you need to know. When they play like that offensively, unless the defense just absolutely pisses down its leg for 60 minutes, they're not going to lose. They're not going to lose a game. And they – today, I mean, that game, look, Tampa made it close in the end. They had 14 points in the fourth and whatever. But, I mean, for most of the game, Kansas City completely dictated against a very good Bucs team in their building.
Yeah, and all true. And 7-5, still a playoff team, but it's getting a little dicey here in Tampa Bay right now. Okay, the time to win some games is on the Bucs. And everybody expected, or at least I think everyone expected, the Chiefs to come out on top today, and they did. But now it's really go time for Tampa as far as solidifying themselves as a playoff team. Gronk with six catches today, Bertaram, over 100 yards. That was a nice day for the Gronkowski, showing a little fountain of youth.
He had a nice day. He had a nice day. Godwin had a nice day, 97 yards. Antonio Brown did nothing. Two catches on three targets, 11 yards. Evans had an okay day. He did have two touchdowns, but he only had 50 yards. No, Gronk played well, man. And they hit some big plays. Like, Brady actually threw the deep ball okay. His two picks, one was on a deep ball, but he got hammered by Tyrann Mathieu as he threw it. It was a ball he shouldn't have thrown. Like, really, the interception was more about his decision than it was the process. And then the second pick was awful. The second pick he threw straight into Dan Sorensen's helmet, who was blitzing, but was stopped by the lineman. He threw the ball really low, hit him in the helmet, popped up, and Mathieu was just standing there for the pick. But all told, like, Brady was okay in the game. Like, he didn't get him killed. His QBR was 60 and the scale of 1 to 100. Not great, but it wasn't awful. It just, again, it's a game where against Kansas City, even if you're a good team, and Tampa certainly is, you just have no margin for error with them. You can't make mistakes. And Brady threw two picks in the red zone. One was a bomb that was into the red zone. Another one, they had a sustained drive. And, you know, you look at Mahomes, 37 of 49, 462, three touchdowns. Like, you're not going to beat them if you make mistakes in the game. And, you know, the Bucs forced a turnover in the red zone on a strip sack. They got, they forced the Chiefs to kick some field goals, but it didn't matter. Like, ultimately, it didn't matter because of Mahomes and Hill and Kelsey.
Steelers and Ravens on Tuesday night. Of course, Pittsburgh 10-0. Pittsburgh's a heavy favorite of that game now. Who's quarterbacking for the Ravens?
RG3.
Okay. Well, there we go. That's probably not going to work out particularly well.
So, nobody.
Well. Right, which is, I guess, we'll get to this in a little bit here, but the Denver Broncos, I did put in my application to try to play QB for the Broncos today. Verram, did you try to get in there?
No, I did not. I do not want any part of that.
This is 2020. Kendall Hinton, 1 of 9. Two interceptions, 13 yards.
He had no chance.
I know.
You know? I know. I mean, like, I love these people on Twitter who are like, oh, you know, he's really playing like crap. You think? Like, what do you think? He's going to go in there and light it up? Like, this poor guy. He has a receiver who's a backup quarterback at Wake Forest. And, like, last night, they just were like, hey, you're playing quarterback. Okay? I mean.
He completed one ball, baby.
Yeah, a little slip screen behind the line and going for 13 yards. And listen, you know what? It is what it is. We'll talk more about COVID in a little bit. But that was a rough look. Denver was losing that game anyway, but that was impossible.
I thought one of the bigger surprises today was the Titans and the Colts, Tennessee going into Indy. Not necessarily just winning the game. Okay, fine. And the Titans are, you know, up top now in the AFC South at 8-3. Colts are 7-4. But they put 35 on the great Colts defense, or what had been a great Colts defense until recent weeks here. They put 35 up in the first half. They hold on convincingly, 45-26. Derrick Henry with just an enormous day, 27 carries, 178 yards, three touchdowns. You know what's underrated about him? He is, like, we always talk about how big he is and just a load to take down, but
right,
he is elusive too. I mean, he was, especially on the carpet, he was dancing all over the place today. It was an impressive performance.
He's faster than people realize, and he does have good feet. Look, I watched that game live through most of the third quarter, and then the game just kind of went so sideways I turned that, or tuned out. But so DeNico Autry and DeForest Buckner are really good, especially Buckner, really good defensive tackles for the Colts. They're both on the COVID list. That game changed fundamentally when that happened. The Colts just couldn't stop. I mean, and I give, look, I'll, you know what, there's a weird thing to say because it sounds obvious, but I think you'll know what I mean. The Titans were smart enough to just look at the obvious thing and go, that's what we're doing in this game. So often teams try to get cute. They outsmart themselves. You know, the Titans looked at this game and went, oh, they have two defensive tackles who are out for this game who are the strength of their defense. You know what we ought to do? Run right at their backups.
Same thing that Green Bay did to the Bears without Akeem Hicks, and it worked.
And they just killed him. I mean, and that, I know that sounds obvious. Like, you would say, well, of course that's what they would do, but so often teams don't do it. They get inside their own head. The Titans were just moving. I was shocked watching that game at how the Titans were just moving the line of scrimmage 3-4 yards at a shot. I mean, Henry wasn't even getting touched. So kudos to them. It's a big win. You know, Tannehill didn't have to do a lot. I mean, he was fine. 221, a touchdown, 10 yards an attempt, which is great. He didn't throw it much. A.J. Brown, 69-yard touchdown catch. He's awesome. The worry I have with the Colts is not that they lost this game. Look, I think with Autry and Buckner, it's a different game. But the offense just really worries me. Like, I know they scored 26 points, but 12 of those points are complete garbage. Rivers threw the ball for 42 times for 295. Like, okay. I mean, 7 yards an attempt, 2 touchdowns, a pick. They can't run the ball at all. They have no ability to run the ball. Hilton, at this point, is a good receiver. They have nobody else. Like, Nyheim Hines is a good receiving back. Burton's a guy at tight end. I worry about them, especially if they got to go play in cold weather in the playoffs. And now, like, that loss they had week one against Jacksonville, which is the only game Jacksonville's won all year, looming large. Because these two teams now split, and the Titans are up a game. But the Titans have the better divisional record because they beat Jacksonville and Indy didn't. So that could end up being the difference. That's a killer for the Colts.
No question. And, you know, speaking of surprises today, hello, Las Vegas. I mean, it's one thing to lose, but to get smoked 43-6 by the Falcons. I mean, the Raiders basically just, I mean, should not have shown up. Whatever they were doing out there was not, they were not playing the actual game of football. And here comes Bill Belichick again, scheming for, I don't know how much credit you want to completely give him for everything he's able to do to quarterbacks, but I thought he definitely impacted Kyler Murray today, under 200 yards for 170, as the Patriots improved 5-6, lurking around. Cardinals are now 6-5. Then the other upset, everyone was getting all high and mighty on the Rams. The Rams are the best team in the NFC. Really? And maybe they are, but 49ers come in and beat them today. Robbie Gould at the horn, 23-20. Those were three big surprises.
Okay, so cliff notes on each of these games. I actually, my picks column that I do every Thursday on FanSided, I picked the Falcons to beat the Raiders because I did not pick them to win 43-6. But I thought that is, to me, the classic letdown game for the Raiders. They lose an emotional game on Sunday Night Football against their hated rivals. It comes right down to it. Then they got to go cross-country, play an early game against a team that they're not going to get up for. They're 3-7. Julio's not even playing for the Falcons. It's a sterile dome where there's no juice whatsoever. I mean, obviously, there's no fans. There's no juice even when there is fans in that stadium. So that, to me, is the classic game that a young team lets down. And I thought for a minute, I said, you know, maybe the Raiders, they started 6-4 last year and then fell off a cliff. So I thought, well, maybe they'll have learned. Then maybe they'll have proven to have learned, but they didn't today. They get hammered. That's a killer of a loss in the AFC. It's a killer. Like, you have to go out there and win that game for the Raiders. Now they're in an uphill battle to make the playoffs. Arizona, you mentioned. Look, I'm not surprised. That was the other game we talked about, I believe, on here last week, that I thought Arizona could lose that game. Newton was absolutely god-awful in this thing. He threw for 84 yards and 2 picks. He's horrific. But and the Pats did nothing rushing the ball either. Didn't go for 4 yards carry, but it didn't matter. Kyler couldn't do anything. Belichick always has something for these young quarterbacks. And the Cardinals made some mistakes. Look, they bogged down at the 1-yard line on one drive. They miss a kick late. You know how it goes, man. I know it's a different team this year for New England, but you do that stuff up in Foxborough, you'll lose. You just do. And they certainly did. And then the Rams game, I've never put the Rams in that group with those, to me, those top four teams, which is Seattle, New Orleans, Green Bay, and Tampa. Although Tampa's starting to fall off. Maybe it should be a big three at this point. And it's because of Goff. I just never trust him. Like, if you can get any pressure on Goff, he's a pumpkin. And in this game, 19-31, 198, 2 picks. Like, you're just – and one of them is a pick six, by the way. Like, you're not going to beat anybody when your quarterback is unbelievably reliant on everything going well around him. You're just not, because in the playoffs, everything doesn't go well around you. You're gonna, and the Niners are playing very hard. I give Shanahan a lot of credit. That team's even 5-6. They've been beat up to the hilt. But like, let's be real. If you're the Rams, if you're a playoff caliber, Super Bowl caliber, you got to win that game. You're at home. It's an awful loss.
Yeah, and it's not like Nick Mullins was lighting it up for the Niners. No. I mean, he didn't throw a touchdown pass. He was 24-35 is fine, but it's only for 252 yards. And that's kind of a stunner, man. The Rams were
– bad loss.
Yeah, in theory, rolling here, but week-to-week NFL. Let's go into the future. Are the Saints or Packers the better bet for home field? Green Bay looked great tonight, put up 41. That's, by the way, for the Packers, that is the second most points that they've scored against the Bears in the Super Bowl era. They put up 55 in 2014, for whatever that's worth. Aaron Rodgers was great. I just love watching him play, even when he's crushing my Bears. But which way are you going on this one, Verderam? Interesting question. You got Saints or Packers, the better bet for home field?
The Packers. And that's a weird thing to say when the Packers are a game behind the Saints. But here's my rationale. So Drew Brees has a collapsed lung, or at least had a collapsed lung. And per Ed Werder over at ESPN, has 11 rib fractures. Like, when is Drew Brees coming back? I don't know. I mean, I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to say I have any inside information on this. I don't. I don't know that anybody does. But he's eligible to come back. I believe it's after next week. I mean, does anyone really think he's coming back after next week? I have a hard time seeing that happen. I mean, 11 rib fractures? I don't care how quote-unquote minor they are. They're rib fractures. So I kind of got to think he's out for at least a couple more games. And the Packers play nobody, man. I mean, you look at their schedule. Eagles at Lions, Panthers, Titans at Bears. Okay, Titans is a tough game. It's at home, though, so it's on Sunday Night Football. They're not losing to the Bears. They're not losing to the Lions. They're not losing to the Panthers. They're not losing to Philly. Like, they're going to be favorites in all five of those games. I think they win all five of those games. I think they're going to go 13-3. And New Orleans lost to Green Bay earlier in the year. So that means that New Orleans is going to run the table, in my opinion. And I do not think they're doing it. Taysom Hill was god-awful today. Okay, it didn't matter. They won by 28 points because Denver didn't have a quarterback. Taysom Hill was 9 of 16 for 78 yards and a pick. He was awful. But they're not beating anybody who's any good with him at quarterback. And look, they got the Falcons next. They probably win, although that's a rivalry game. They probably win. Then they're at the Eagles. Probably win. But then they host the Chiefs. Like, if Drew Brees isn't playing in that game, they're losing that game. Taysom Hill is not beating Patrick Mahomes. So, you know, I just kind of think they're both going to end up 13-3, and the Packers have the tiebreaker.
I think Green Bay's running the table too. I think you're spot on here. As you mentioned, Green Bay, we should hit on the story in the NFC North with Matt Patricia getting the old boot, yes, which we've been calling out for quite a while, along with the general manager, former now GM, Bob Quinn in Detroit. You know what's just painful about this from a Lions perspective? You had a quality head coach who was doing a decent job for you and Jim Caldwell. You fired him, over 500 guy, for the disaster that is Matt Patricia.
Yep.
Good job moving forward. But that's just like, you know, you look in the rearview mirror and it just looks real damn ugly. And any thoughts on where the Lions go from here?
So my column, the Stack in the Box column on Monday, is going to be led with that. I wrote it over the weekend. A little preview of it. Look, I think for the GM job, one name that I'll tell you right now I'd keep an eye on is John Dorsey, because nobody evaluates talent coming out of college better than John Dorsey. Nobody. You want a good case in point? Look at the Chiefs. Team is loaded to the hilt with guys he's drafted. And Veach, and deservedly so, gets a lot of credit from Mahomes, but Dorsey was the one who took him and made the move. Chris Jones, Travis Kelce, Eric Fisher, Tyreek Hill. I mean, all Dorsey guys. He drafted, you know, Kareem Hunt. He drafted very well in Cleveland. You know, Mayfield obviously right now is a question mark, but I'd keep an eye on him as an experienced hand and someone who's been in that division for a long time with Green Bay. As for coach, here's the thing. They're not going to get Eric Bieniemy because they don't have the best option, right? Like if you're a Bieniemy, you're going to have your pick of the litter and there are just better jobs out there. Detroit's got to go out and get somebody who is a young, in my opinion, a young assistant, 50 and younger, who maybe isn't going to have 3 or 4 interviews. Go get Joe Brady from Carolina. Go get Matt Eberflus from Indianapolis, D coordinator there. Like, and give that person a chance to build the team. Say, look, we know we're not good. We got to probably move off Stafford. We're giving you 3 years minimum. We're going to build this thing the right way. To me, that's how you sell Detroit, because it's not a sexy place to live. It's not a sexy franchise right now. You got to sell stability. And they have a new owner there in Sheila Ford Hamp, who's the daughter of the Firestone family. Obviously, of course, also the Ford family. This is her first hiring cycle. And I think this is an opportunity for them to rebrand a little bit.
Patricia, 13-29-1 in his two seasons with the Lions, 6-10, 3-12-1 last year, and then now 4-7. Just to put a little cap on the old headstone here, if you will. The Brady call, he was discussed at Thanksgiving to be replacing Matt Nagy in Chicago. So it's the second time I'm hearing his name in the last 4 days. So
very popular in NFL circles.
Yeah. So. Whoever it's going to be, I'm just going to say this to Detroit. It's going to be an upgrade. At least they won't have a laminated play card with a pencil where you can't write on it. I think that's the and Matt Patricia, by the way, will get another job in the NFL, and he's just got a shot at it, and it didn't work out. So I'm not – no pity parties.
He'll never be a head coach.
No.
He'll be a coordinator.
Yeah, he'll be a coordinator. He'll be a DC.
But that's a one-and-done head coaching situation. Good luck ever selling that to a franchise.
Sure. You want to talk about the COVID and whether or not that's becoming the regular. I mean, the NFL is playing their games today, or did play their games today, but they're having a mandatory nobody in the facilities Monday and Tuesday, which is interesting, by the way. They're having 2 games played on tomorrow and Tuesday. I think this is going to be the regular the rest of the way. Where are you going?
I think it's going to be more frequent because of the way the country's going, but I don't think it's going to be, and I'll tell you why. I think if this continues to happen here, I think the league, if they had to, would pause it for a week and just say everybody's getting in a friggin' local bubble. That's it. And it was reported today that they've talked about that. I've heard similar rumblings that if they really felt like this thing was starting to close in on them, that they could kind of do something like that. Look, I think my feeling is the NFL is going to do whatever it takes to get to the playoffs, whatever it takes. And then you knock 18 teams off the ledger, and then you can just individually bubbleize these teams in their cities, put them in a hotel, basically hermetically seal the hotel, and just say, look, you're not going anywhere except on sanctioned buses and sanctioned planes, and we're going to clean the hell out of them. You're going to go to the stadium, and you're going to go straight back to the hotel. And that's what you're doing through the Super Bowl. That's it. Because I don't think it's hard to do. I really don't. In that sense, look, you're going to have 14 playoff teams. You're immediately cutting it down to 8 at the end of wild card weekend. You know, and then after that, 4. So I don't think it's that difficult to do that. And the players, like, they're going to want the playoff money and everything else. They're going to get on board. But no, I think, look, man, the NFL sent a message today with the Broncos. You're going to play a game like that. They're basically saying, hey, we're playing these games. So you can do whatever you got to do, wear a mask, get in line. Otherwise, yeah, you're going to have a practice squad receiver playing quarterback.
You think that looks different if Denver had actually been in a playoff race?
Maybe. Yep, I do. And I don't think, like, quote unquote, it shouldn't be. Yeah, probably. Like, if that's the Chiefs, yeah, they're not playing that game.
I mean, I'm not sure what I think. My guess is that they probably still would. Screw you. We're playing these games. Maybe. We got TV money to make, and We're not stopping the season because you're missing your guy who's got COVID. I think they would play it, but it is interesting to consider.
I'm going to say this, and I have no basis for this other than just my opinion. Let's say it was the Chiefs, and Chad Henne, you know, just throwing a name out there, got COVID. And it came, you know, Mahomes is a close contact, and he tested negative, as the Broncos quarterbacks did. I believe that the NFL would be like, yeah, he can play. That's my opinion.
Maybe. Money talks. Always has, always will. All right, let's look at the Bears. You got, will Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace survive the Bears collapse, which is now on a five-game slide at 5-6. Mitchell Trubisky was back out there today. I actually thought, relative to Nick Foles, he looked a zillion times better. The offense looked better.
Really?
Yep. He's elusive, man. He actually can get away. Now, he throws terrible picks. He's thrown into triple coverage.
He's so bad.
I'm not trying to make it out like he's, you know what was the most disgusting stat from the whole game tonight that they put on NBC? The Chicago Bears leading quarterback in throwing touchdown passes against Green Bay is Sid Luckman. Sid Luckman.
I believe it.
From the 40s.
Hall of Famer. Great man. Yeah,
that's great. Sid Luckman had a completion percentage of about 43%.
Still the best the Bears have ever had by a mile.
That's so pathetic. You're telling me that nobody could throw more touchdown passes? And it for 16 touchdowns. It ain't like it, you know, I mean, my God. You play him twice a year.
I would have thought Cutler had it.
Cutler was second with 15.
Okay. I mean, just not because Cutler was any good, but just because, you know, he was there long enough.
He was there forever. You'd think that damn Bozo would have thrown at least 20 touchdown passes against him. He was there for nearly 10 years. That was just pathetic. But to answer your question, will Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace survive the Bears collapse? I mean, I don't know. Virginia McCaskey was up there in the box, all 98 years old of her, watching the Bears today with her mask on. I wonder what she was thinking. Lawrence Holmes on the Score had a funny tweet. Well, you brought Virginia up there for this? that was a good zinger. But if I had to guess, I think they both survive. I think they get one more crack at it. They're both signed. It's a weird COVID year. I think they have some winnable games here. They play the Lions. They got Jacksonville. Maybe they get to 7. I think they survive.
I brought it up because I know we talk about it a lot, I feel like. But you've always had this opinion. I was just curious if this game was kind of changing, considering I kind of feel like this was the ultimate, you know, knockout blow here. Listen, man, you're plugged into Chicago sports.
Nobody knows what's going to happen here, though, man. I'm guessing.
The problem for me is, look, I think Pace has no business being employed. Zero. He's done an awful job. That said, you do hear that, like, the McCaskies love him. And that, like, they're not going to can him. Like, they love him, like, on a personal level. They're just not going to fire him. But then I look at it and I say, my God, like, Chicago's a real sports town. Like, no offense to some of the other cities in the NFL or whatever. But, like, Chicago's bear country. I mean, I've only lived here 5.5 years, but like the Bears and the Cubs and the Blackhawks when they're good, but like those are the teams, right? Like the Bulls, certainly, I'm sure, but like right now they're down. The Bears are a huge deal in Chicago. And so for them to be not even just like bad, because they're not like awful. I mean, they're 5-6, but they're just so pathetic to watch. Like I just, it's almost like it's just sad. Like, I think at some point, the McCaskies have to fire Pace. And if you fire Pace, you have to fire Nagy. Have to. You can't fire Pace and then go to some GM candidate and go, okay, listen, we want you to have Nagy. Okay, great. Well, what happens when Nagy gets fired after next year? Then what? Like, I don't think they're going to can him. But I think they should. I don't think there's any reason not to fire both of them. And I've been a Nagy defender up until this year. This is abominable. They can't score a point.
Well, and you've got Tony Dungy on national TV saying that the Bears defense basically gave up. I mean, he said that. Now,
I thought they did. Did you?
I thought that Kyle Fuller was the only guy out there that I saw today who had any real pride in hitting someone. I mean, Eddie Jackson's out there. He's trying to strip the ball. Sometimes you got to put your head down, man. You know, it's you're on national TV. It's a rivalry game. I know you're short of Keem Hicks. I know that whatever it, but and I know there's a zillion NFL rules right now, but come go out there and hit someone, man. I mean, Fuller was trying to do it all by himself. So listen, yep. Did they give up? I think it's a fair assessment. And
I thought it was too.
Yeah. So,
and I got to tell you, not, and I don't want to belabor the point here. When you quit in the NFL, like I was watching the game on Thursday, if you want to call it that, between Detroit and Houston. And I was watching, I think it was the third quarter. And just the body language on Stafford, the way the defense was playing, I kind of just said it to myself watching the game, but I said, this is it. They've got to fire him. I mean, Detroit doesn't even care. Houston's just running up and down. There's no effort. I got to tell you, man, not quite to that level. I felt the same way about the Bears tonight. The Bears' defense looked like they basically said, F it. We're sick and tired of having to stop every team on every drive because the offense can't move the ball. Trubisky's out here throwing these YOLO balls. I'm just going to sling it out there, whatever the hell. I mean, that pick in the end zone, what the hell was that? I mean, it's one of the worst picks I've ever seen. He just threw. It wasn't like he got fooled. It was just double coverage. The guy had no shot to catch the ball. Just wails it in there. Later in the game, he did the same thing down the middle of the field. You know, the fumble, okay, listen, guys lose balls, in the, you know, they fumble in the pocket. But, I mean, he looks atrocious. And that, to me, is the biggest indictment of the coaching staff. And obviously of Nagy. Like, Trubisky's never been good, but he's gotten worse. Like, Trubisky 2 years ago is better than this. He can't even play.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I'm going to defend him here, which is a weird place to be. But he threw a couple of touchdown. He threw a couple of touchdown passes earlier. They were both dropped. Cole Kmet drops the ball.
He did.
Allen Robinson. It's a 50-50 ball, but like he's got to make that catch. I mean, twice they should have been in the end zone. At least it didn't look like you watch them play with Nick Foles. They can't even get the ball out. That was not the experience with Trubisky today. I mean, I think you stick with him, but look, the heat's being turned up on Nagy right now. I mean, I'm just like scrolling through Twitter as we're talking, and I mean, there's article after article, hot seat heats up for Bears coach Matt Nagy after humiliating 41-25 loss to the Packers. People, so look, if it goes straight south. I suppose if they finish 5-11, he probably does not survive. I don't think they're going to though, and I really think it does require 5-11. You got Detroit this week, then you got the Texans, then you got the Vikings, then you got the Jaguars, and then you got last week at Green Bay. And who knows if the Packers are going to need that game or not? I mean, I don't know. They might even get to 8. You firing them at 8-8 after 12-4 and 8-8.
8-8, I think it's a conversation. Anything less, I'd fire. Anything less, I'd fire.
To me, it doesn't matter at this point if they finish 8-8 or 5-11. Do you want him to be your coach going forward long term? Because I think the answer to that is emphatically no. So you should fire him now and move on. But I don't think they will. John Fox got 4 years, and he didn't have a 12-4 season, and they're going to the playoffs. I don't know. And if you are getting rid of Nagy, you're letting Pace hire him, the next coach. You got to fire him too. I mean, they're a package deal. So, all right, let's move on. You're predicting that Anthony Lynn's going to be out at the end of the year with the Chargers.
He has to be. Nobody is a nicer guy than Anthony Lynn. Okay, nobody. Anthony Lynn needs to be fired. And I take no pleasure in saying that. He has to go. I don't know how you can bring him back. I get it. Not exactly a hotbed of fandom for the Chargers. I understand all that. He's got to go. Okay. And not because they lost to the Bills. The Bills are a better team. The Chargers, did you see any of that game?
I did not watch Chargers Bills.
Okay. So I watched the second half of the game. I didn't watch first half, in full disclosure. Now, they're down 27-17 late in the game. They're not going to win. Fair enough. So the Bills are winning by 10. It's the final 2 minutes. And Herbert throws the ball. It's 4th and 27, okay, at the Chargers on 43. Throws what is essentially a Hail Mary. It gets caught. The Bills, apparently, not great against Hail Marys. Ball gets caught at the Bills' 2-yard line. Chargers do not have a timeout. They get up to the line, 1st and goal at the 2. They're down 10 points, 24 seconds left. They run the ball. I mean, like, what are you doing? This coming, by the way, after, which is, this is far more egregious, it's 17-6 with 2 minutes to go before the half. The Chargers are down 17-6. They got a timeout. They got a 4th and 2 at Buffalo's 48-yard line. They punt. Like, with 12 seconds left. Like, what is the downside of going for it? And if you watch the Chargers, this is every week. They have no ability to manage the clock. Lynn is conservative as hell. Their special teams are a wreck. They finally reassigned the special teams coordinator earlier this week. Anthony Lynn, it will be a coach in the NFL for a long time. He may even get another head coaching opportunity, and I wouldn't be opposed to that. You know, maybe he learns, he reassesses. This ain't it. Like, they've got to move on, and they'd be a hell of an attractive job, man. Herbert, L.A., you could do, you know, good roster. You could do a lot worse. Chargers have got a lot of good head coaching candidates in there.
That is unbelievable. Kick the field goal and do the onside kick, my man.
Wait, just, my God, throw it.
Or
what are you doing? It's inconceivable. I was watching it when it happened and was just blown away. Like, I honestly thought I was missing something.
Well, and also, as you're underlining, like, when you blow leads week after week after week, you're obviously not understanding the intricacies of how to manage the clock / win close football games, which is what you get paid to do. All right, let's do in or out. The Dolphins make the AFC playoffs, in or out. They do get by the Jets today. Tua not able to go. Fitzmagic gets it done. That was a big loss for the Jets because if you're going to win a game, today would have been a shot at it. Didn't happen. You got the Dolphins in the playoffs?
No, I don't. The Dolphins did not play well today. They beat the Jets, which I guess congratulations. But no, I don't, because I think, look, they're going to beat the Bengals this coming week. They're going to get to 8-4. The Bengals are god-awful. Then they play Kansas City, and then they are – home, I believe it goes to the Pats, then at the Raiders, at the Bills. I think they're finishing 9-7. And the way to get to the playoffs for them is they're going to have to beat the Raiders and then maybe finagle it where you're 10-6, you win some breakers. Cleveland's 8-3. Like, Cleveland's a total fraud, by the way, and the biggest fraud on earth, but they're 8-3. They have a negative point differential, and they've won 8 of their 11 games. It's just – it's ridiculous. But that said, they won 8 games. Like, they're getting a 10. I think Baltimore is getting a 10, even with this loss coming up to Pittsburgh. I think they're going to get their schedule's a joke after this game. If they can just get healthy, I think they'll win 10 games. I think the Raiders, even with that loss to the Falcons, as bad as it is, they got 2 huge games with Miami and Indy, and they're at home in both of them. Like – I think Miami's on the outside looking in. A hell of a year, even if it finishes that way. But I think that's how it goes for them.
It's interesting. Like, is Tua going to get back healthy and play? Are they sticking with, or is it going to be the Fitzmagic show to the end here? I find it very entertaining. That Dolphins Raiders game is going to be a sweet one. I guess I'd have to pick the Raiders if my life was on it. So I'll be with you here and be out on the Dolphins. But they're certainly going to make it interesting here down the stretch. The Seahawks win at least 2 playoff games, in or out on Seattle?
I'm in.
Whoa. You've been riding the Seahawks roller coaster. Go ahead.
Defensively, they're not good, although they've been better the last week and a half. I don't know what that means. So it's a week and a half, but It is what it is. They have a great quarterback. I know he's turning the ball over some. I don't care. He's turning the ball over some because they have to make every play in the book to win these games. Here's why I'm in. Let's say now their schedule's not hard going forward either, although they do play the Rams again, and they, you know, the Niners are never going to just completely roll over, but it's not a hard schedule. But let's say, for argument's sake, they go 12-4. They're the 3 seed. Okay. They're going to play who in the first round? They're probably getting one of Arizona, Tampa, LA. They're at home. Probably, like, I'd pick them to win. Right? Like, I'd pick them to win that game. Because Arizona, look, Arizona 6-5, and I've been on the Cardinals train since April. But, I mean, let's be real. You're a Hail Mary away from being 5-6 and on a 4-game skid. Like, they have not played well. So, I'm not picking them to beat Seattle in a playoff game. I'm not picking the Rams. I'm not picking Goff to go on the road and win a playoff game. And I'm sure, and I know he's done it, but I'm not the way he's playing right now. I wouldn't. And I would. Would you pick Tampa to go up there and beat him?
Listen, no. And listen, I've got Seattle in the Super Bowl. That's my. Okay. That's okay. And I
got him losing to New Orleans in the NFC title game.
Fair enough.
That's where I got him right now. I need to beat Green Bay.
And I. The Packers are getting better, man. That offense, he's figuring out his weapons. Robert Tanyan, I mean, right?
Yeah. I agree. My big problem with them, not to cut you off, my big problem with them is that dead defense, man. Like, I know against the Bears it looks good, but they do not stop anybody. And their coordinator, Mike Pettine, is under fire, and for good reason. That's where I just think Seattle in a game against them would score 50 points. I just don't think Green Bay could stop him. But who knows, man? I don't know that Seattle could stop Green Bay.
So we're both in on the Seahawks winning at least 2 playoff games. Patrick Mahomes will throw for 5,000 yards. He's on pace for that now after 460, whatever it was, say 463. I guess I'm out because they're probably not going to need him to do it. Where are you going?
You don't ever, ever. Bet against Patrick F. Mahomes.
You don't. Actually,
Patrick L. Mahomes. For
I'm saying that he won't because I'm betting with him that he just won't need to do it. I'm betting on his talent, like putting away the season beforehand.
I'm betting on him. He's just going to do it. Like, I understand your theory and your point. It's well taken. He's on pace for 5,086. I think he's getting there. Like, the last month of the year, like, I've watched every snap of his career probably 2 times over. The last month has just been an unbelievable tour de force, even by his standards. Like, okay, the Jets stink, but 400-plus yards, 5 touchdowns. The Panthers lights them up for, I think it was 376, 378, like 4 touchdowns. The Raiders lights them up and down the field. Then goes to Tampa. And, like, you usually, look, man, you see 462, that's usually a lot of garbage time crap, right? Like, guys throw for that many yards, they don't win the game. He threw for 370 yards in the first half. It was unbelievable. He almost threw for 300 yards in a quarter. Like, it was, and, like, Tampa's a real team. It's not like they went out and beat, you know, the Jets like that. Like, he was just lighting them up left and right. And I'll tell you what else. And this is a small point as an aside, but I just think it goes to show, A, the confidence level on him, and B, just the greatness of him. The Chiefs went into the 2-minute warning against Tampa. Tampa used all their timeouts. Chiefs are around midfield, for those who didn't see the game. And it's 2nd and 8, I believe. Now, the Chiefs are up 3 points. They could run the ball twice, run it down to about 30, 35 seconds, punt the ball, pin Tampa. Tampa's got no timeouts. And Tampa's got to go 55, 50 yards, kick a field goal. Reed threw the ball twice. Risking an incompletion, risking a stoppage, risking a pick, because he basically just said, screw it. Even though we can do that, our odds are better to win the game just letting him throw the ball twice. And right as rain, he just ripped it in there, 2 completions, 3rd and 6, hits Hill on a comebacker, boom, game over. Like,
it's the ultimate luxury in the NFL right now. How's that?
Well put. I guess, Carm, all I'm trying to say is, I think we said this last week, so I don't want to belabor it. You got to watch Jordan growing up in your formative years, And I can't imagine what that must have been like to root for him. I can sure as hell imagine what it was like to watch him rip my heart out. But he was the first athlete in my lifetime. Now, I was a kid in the 90s, but I remember him. I remember the back half of three-peat. He was the first player in my life who was a player who beat my team routinely. And I still loved watching him. Like, I could separate the fact, even as a 10-year-old, that, like, he's so great that even though he's killing me, I just love watching him. I remember that double nickel game he had at the Garden. And people forget this. I'm sure you remember. But, like, the last play of the game, he passed. He went up. The whole Knicks team went to defend him. And he passed to Bill Wennington, who just slammed it in. And I remember even as a kid being like, that's an unbelievable play. Like, everyone in the world thought he was going to shoot the ball. And he was like, oh, no, Bill Wennington. Right in. Like, game over. Mahomes is the closest thing I've ever seen to that in my life for any team that I root for. And really, as we're going down the road here, I think just any team I've seen, period, since. Like, there is a level with Mahomes where you watch him and you're just like, I don't care what the other team does. They're not stopping him. I don't care what the coverage is, if they get pressure, if they blitz, if they back all. Like, I don't care. He's beating them. And that's how I feel about him right now. It is just such an unbelievable experience to watch him play football. I am just in awe. And that's why, I am in all the way.
You really, you know, when your head hits the pillow at night, you should send Brett Veach a freaking, I don't know, a lifetime supply of flowers or
Dunkin'. Nice gift basket.
I mean, so, you know, to trade up to 10 and taking a quarterback and you're not picking Deshaun Watson, who was 28-2 in his last 2 years at Clemson and beat Alabama in the national championship game. And you're going with Patrick Mahomes, who you went out and saw multiple times and just fell in love with. That's some serious cojones, man. And obviously, and Deshaun Watson's having a hell of a career.
He's a great player.
But they hit they knock that ball so far out of the park, it's unbelievable. All right.
Speaking of the Texans.
Speaking of the Texans and Deshaun Watson, the Texans have the most attractive job opening in their head coaching position. Are you in or out on that one?
I'm in unless the Chargers move on from Lynn. Then I think the Chargers do because Herbert is surrounded by a much better roster. So here's my thinking. We just talked about Sean Watson. He's top five quarterback to me. Sean Watson is tremendous. Like borderline, like a potential Hall of Fame type talent. I look at Deshaun Watson and think, if I'm a head coach, especially an offensive mind, I could make that work. Now, downside is with Houston, it's a little bit of a long game because you're digging out what Bill O'Brien did. You don't have picks this year. The defense is a total mess. But I get nice weather, no income tax. I get Watson. It's not a bad gig. It's not, and they're patient as hell with the coaches. Kubiak was there forever. O'Brien was there forever. It's not a bad job. The Jets, as bad as it is on paper, is interesting because you get Lawrence, in theory, right? Like, if you get Trevor Lawrence, and you're in New York, you could do it. Now, the ownership's a friggin' disaster, but you get Lawrence. Jacksonville, which I imagine will be open. If you like Justin Fields, it's a good job. No income tax again, good weather. And they actually have weapons. Like LaVisca Chenault is a very good rookie receiver. James Robinson, pride of Rockford, has been an unbelievable revelation at running back for them. So there are some decent jobs out there. Atlanta's not a bad job, but I just think all told, again, unless the Chargers job becomes open, I like the Houston job the most.
The two worst jobs, potentially, well, one of them for officially Detroit, and Chicago, if it happens. That's a tough gig. Who the hell's quarterback in the Bears?
Yeah, I mean, Detroit to me is the worst of the openings.
Yeah.
Because there's just nothing, man. Like, look, I'm not trying to rag on Detroit. Where would you rather live? Right? Like, Chicago. Let's be real. Chicago. And The other part of it with Detroit is it's just such a heavy lift with them. It's just such – that roster's so bad. Like, the Bears roster needs help, obviously the most important position. But this is a very, very heavy quarterback draft, which, by the way, the Bears don't take a quarterback in the first round. Everybody should be fired on the spot. Everybody. I don't care if God's in this draft as a receiver. If they don't take a quarterback between the kid at BYU, Trask, all these guys, I mean, you know, Trey Lance, I mean, come on now. Got to like somebody. And I don't care. Move up. Do whatever you got to do. You know, make it happen.
Let's wrap it on up. I know that you got a little extra challenge going on in the Verderam household right now.
Yeah. So Wednesday, Steph called me from work and said, I can't taste anything. And so that's not great. Probably get tested. So she did. Funny thing was, she came home a couple hours later. Taste was not fully back, but was mostly back. She's sitting there talking to me. She said, I can't believe I went and got tested for COVID. Like, now I feel totally fine. I can't, you know, I was stupid. I just panicked. Gets a call. Hey, you're positive.
Oh,
so
good.
She's been quarantined for the last 5 days in our in the old master bedroom. I've been taken to the guest quarters where I'm sleeping on a bed on a mattress that it feels like a prison cot. So I'll tell you right now, that will be replaced. It's been tough, man. It's been tough. And now, luckily, thankfully, Stephanie is doing fine. She's got mild symptoms. She's just tired. She's really tired. Had a headache one day, but by and large, is doing good. You know, she's even padding around the house a little bit. I mean, keeping distance. She's wearing a mask the whole time. She's got one of those N95. So we basically disinfected the entire house, any high traffic area anyway. I'll tell you what the hardest part is, though, man. And this is kind of a sappy thing, but if you have kids, you get it. And maybe even if you don't have kids, you get it. She can't touch Maisie. And Maisie wants to hug Steph in the worst way, wants to give her a kiss. I want you to pick her up. She just can't. I mean, for anyone who doesn't know, Maisie's three. And Maisie was just crying today. And I said, you know, honey, what's wrong? She's like, I just want to hug mom. You know, and that is the unseen hand in this whole thing. Right? Like.
What do you say?
You'll be able to hug her in a few days. I mean, she's got to wait till the end of Friday.
I mean, do you tell her that mommy has.
Mom's sick. And we don't want to get sick because we both got tested as well. We're both negative.
Right. They had to test the three-year-old.
And they And they just shut down Maisie's daycare because one of the people who runs it is positive.
Oh my God.
And the other one who runs it might be. So, and they all wear masks the whole time. They shut the whole thing down. It's just, unfortunately, we have to send her. We have no choice. I mean, we both work. There's no way around it. But, man, it's been tough, man. It's been really – but I'm looking at it like this. Like, I am thankful in the Thanksgiving spirit here that it's a mild case to this point. Knock on wood. Thank God. It'll stay that way. Maisie doesn't have it. I don't have it, although, frankly, the hell with me. I'm glad Maisie doesn't have it. But, yeah, it hits home when your daughter just is crying because she just can't hug her mom. And it made me think about all these poor people who have lost people. Who can't hug their mom or their dad or their best friend or their brother or their sister because they might get COVID and that person's in their hospital bed on a ventilator and that's the end. Like, as sad as this whole experience has been for Maisie and Steph, right? Like, God willing, everything goes the way it's going, like, Maisie will be able to hug Steph in a few days. You know, those people that have lost a loved one, they'll never have that person back. And so my parting shot here is, look, this isn't a political thing. People have got to get past that. This is a be a good human being thing. And I don't care. Like, if you don't feel a mask helps you, okay, look, I'm beyond even trying to fight that. Fine. Do it so somebody else's kid can hug their mom at night. And do it so you don't end up in that situation. Even if you don't think it helps you, maybe it does. And do it so somebody doesn't, God forbid, lose a loved one. One of our friends down the street, his brother-in-law died of it 2 weeks ago, 38 years old.
Like, 38.
38. And I watched football with this guy 2.5 weeks ago for a brief minute. He swung by and, you know, we were, you know, following protocol and whatnot, but he swung by and he just stopped by his friend's house to pick something up. He's dead. He's gone. His wife is a teacher, got COVID, came home, gave it to him. Wife recovered just fine. He died.
Jesus.
Do your job.
Everything that Matt said, I would think that everybody who's listening, and thank you, by the way, for listening to Stack in the Box. We appreciate it. Is with you, brother. I'll take us out on a slightly positive.
Do it.
Well, you know, it's Thanksgiving, and I went to my wife's mom's, a very small gathering, in the garage. We had half the garage open, whatever. Anyway, but you know, my dad, he's gonna be 95 here, knock on wood, coming up December 16th. So they're home, and no one's going over there. And my brother's like, "You want to do a Zoom?" And I'm like, "Yeah, who you want to invite?" He's like, "Well, let's get dad on there." I'm like, "He doesn't know how to Zoom." That computer that he has is from like 1962. It doesn't have a camera. It's not going to work.
Old man Carmen, how old?
He's 94. He'll be 95 coming up December 16th. So he's like, and I'm thinking to myself too, when I get this, I'm like, "You want me to send out the invite for the Zoom? Like, you're not going to do anything." And, you know, I thought it was just going to fall by the wayside. I get the email invitation. The Zoom invite from my 60-plus-year-old brother, and my father's on there. And lo and behold, the f-ing guy, excuse me, pops on. There he is.
underrated him.
Yeah, I did, and I didn't know his computer worked. And so, you know, the first thing is, like, you could see, like, one blade of grass of his hair, and he's trying to – I'm like, "Dad, tilt the computer," and he was struggling with it. "Why do I only see myself?" I'm like, "Dad, hit the – but he figured it all out, and it was amazing.
Good for him.
Honestly, it was just a nice, uplifting moment on Thanksgiving, just to be able to see my – 94-year-old father and have a moment. It was really nice.
That's great. I'm glad you guys had a good Thanksgiving. And you know what? Let me just really quickly say, in that spirit, because I don't want to go out on a sad note in the podcast either. It was incredible. And I actually said this in the Arrowhead Attic podcast. So if you listen to both, A, thank you very much. B, you're going to hear a story twice. I tweeted out on Thursday, on Thanksgiving morning, that I was just thankful for my wife and, you know, all that she does and how she's a frontline worker. She's a nurse. And all she talked about was when she found out she got COVID, the first thing she said was, "Well, you know, when I get better, I'll have immunity. I could work even more." I was blown away by it. I was like, "You got to be kidding me." Like, God bless her, man. But in any event, tweet out, "I'm thankful for her. You know, she's COVID positive. She's doing good." I didn't tweet it for any other reason. I was thinking about it on a Thursday morning. I had a quiet moment to myself, and I'm thankful for her. The amount of people that reached out over that tweet, it was I was blown away by it. Absolutely blown away. I mean, friends, people who I just know from Twitter, people in league circles, like people that work for teams. It was unbelievable. Like, I could not believe how many people reached out, DM, text, call, "Hey, tell your wife, you know, we really appreciate her and we're thinking about her, thinking about your family." It was reaffirming in a year that has been incredibly turbulent. It was a nice way to have a belief in humanity. It really, like, it was just, and most, if not all those people they didn't have to, like, I didn't expect to hear from anybody, and it would have been fine, but it really was. It was an incredibly impressive showing. I'm glad as we wind down this year, I'm glad that it seems like that there's an end in sight. I'm also glad that people have not lost who they are. And that's something that we can carry forward.
Good to be with you. And thank you for listening. Stacking the Box as we enter week 13. Which feels like a proper ending to this particular podcast after this Thanksgiving weekend. We will see you midweek Wednesday as we look ahead to, moving down the playoff stretch here. So thank you. Yeah, here we go. That's right. December indeed. It'll be whatever, December 2nd on Tuesday, on Wednesday. We'll see you then.